The journey to Bucyrus in the royal barge took 2 days, with Asmore's regiment following in 4 naval galleys. They landed on the yellow beach under the walls of the temple, and the priests were waiting to welcome the regent with psalms and offerings of gum arabic and myrrh. The regent's delight in sweet-smelling substances was already known throughout the land. They were shown to the quarters that had been prepared for them, while Naja bathed, perfumed and refreshed himself with fruit and sherbet. Taita visited the sanctuary in company with the high priest and made sacrifice to the great god Osiris. Afterwards, at Taita's subtle suggestion, the high priest withdrew and left him alone to make his preparations for the evening. Lord Naja had never been present at the working of the mazes. There were few living persons who had. Taita would put on an impressive show for him, but he had no intention of subjecting himself to the exhausting and harrowing ordeal of the authentic ritual. After sunset, the high priest entertained the regent at a banquet. In his honour, he served the famous wine from the vineyards that surrounded the temple. It had been at Bucyrus that the great god Osiris had first introduced the grape to Egypt. When the luscious vintage had mellowed the regent and the rest of the company, the priests presented a series of theatrical acts representing the life history of the great god. In each of these, Osiris was depicted with different skin colorations, white as the wrappings of a mummy, black for the realm of the dead, red for the god of retribution. Always he held the crook and the flail, the insignia of the ruler, and his feet were held together like those of a corpse. In the final act, his face was painted green to symbolize his vegetable aspect. As with the Dharamilit, which signified life and sustenance, Osiris was buried in the earth, which signified death. In the darkness of the netherworld, he germinated like the millet seed, then emerged into the glorious cycle of life eternal. While the tableaus were enacted, the high priest recited the god's names of power: Eye of the Night, the Eternally Good Being, Son of Jeb, and Wenefer, Perfect in Majesty. Then, surrounded by the smoke of the incense pots, to the beat of gong and drum, the priests chanted the epic poem of the struggle between good and evil. The legend related how Seth, envious of his virtuous brother, locked Osiris in a chest and threw him into the Nile to drown. When his dead body washed up on the river bank, Seth hacked it to pieces and hid the various parts. Here at Bucyrus, he hid the Jed pillar, the backbone. Isis, their sister, searched for and found all the parts of the corpse and reassembled them. Then she copulated with Osiris. While they were locked in union, her wings fanned the breath of life back into him. Long before midnight, the regent of Egypt had consumed a flagon of the rich and heady wine and was in a nervous, susceptible condition, his religious superstitions titillated by the priests. As the silver beam of the full moon entered through the precisely aligned aperture in the roof of the temple and moved softly across the flags of the nave towards the closed door of the sanctuary, the high priest gave a signal, and all the other priests rose and moved out in procession, leaving Lord Naja and Taita alone. When the chanting of the departing priests had dwindled with distance into a heavy silence, Taita took the regent by the hand and led him down the moonlit nave to the doors of the sanctuary. As they approached, the great bronze-covered doors swung open of their own accord. Lord Naja stared, and his hand trembled in Taita's. He might have drawn back, but the Magus led him forward. The sanctuary was lit by 4 braziers, one in each corner of the small chamber. There was a low stool in the centre of the tiled floor. Taita led Naja to it and gestured for him to be seated. As he did so, The doors swung closed behind them, and Naja looked round at them fearfully. He would have started up again, but Taita placed a hand on his shoulder to restrain him. "No matter what you see and what you hear, do not move, do not speak. As you value your life, do nothing, say nothing." Taita left him sitting, and with stately tread approached the statue of the god. He raised his hands, and suddenly he was holding a golden chalice by its stem. He lifted it on high and called on Osiris to bless the contents, then brought it back to Naja and urged him to drink. The honey, viscous liquid tasted of crushed almonds, rose petals, and mushrooms. Taita clapped his hands, and the chalice was gone. He held out his empty hands and made a mystical pass back and forth before Naja's face, and in the blink of an eye, the mazes of Amun-Ra filled his cupped hands. These ivory counters Naja recognized from the fanciful accounts he had heard of the ritual. Taita invited him to cover them with his own hands, while he recited an invocation to Amun-Ra and the host of the Pantheon. "Greatness in light and fire, furious in divine majesty, approach and hearken to our pleas." Naja squirmed on his stool as the mazes grew hot to the touch, and it was with relief that he passed them back to Taita. He was sweating heavily as he watched the old man carry them across the sanctuary and place them at the feet of the gigantic statue of Osiris. The Magus knelt there, bowed over them. For a while there was no sound within the chamber except the hiss of the flames, no movement except the shadows, cast by the lambent light of the braziers dancing on the stone walls. Then abruptly a terrible disembodied shriek rang through the sanctuary. It sounded as though once again the god's vitals were being ripped from his body by his evil brother. Naja moaned softly and covered his head with his shawl. Again there was silence, until suddenly the flames of the braziers flared as high as the roof and turned from yellow to fierce shades of green and violet, crimson and blue. Great clouds of smoke boiled from them and filled the chamber. Naja choked and coughed. He felt as though he were suffocating and his senses reeled. He could hear his own breath reverberating in his head. Taita turned slowly to face him, and Naja shuddered in horror, for the Magus was transformed. His face glowed with green light, like the face of the resurrected god. Green foam frothed from his gaping mouth and poured down his chest, and his eyes were blind orbs that flashed silver rays in the light of the braziers. Without moving his feet, he glided towards where Naja sat, and from his gaping, frothing mouth issued the voices of a wild horde of demons and djinns, a terrible chorus of screams and moans, hissings and grunting, retching and insane laughter. Lord Naja tried to rise, but the sounds and the smoke seemed to fill his skull, and blackness overwhelmed him. His legs gave way beneath him, and he slumped forward off the stool, onto the tiles in a dead faint.